for federal news.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm not.
Yes. It's been an interesting week in technology again. We have a little space technology, too.
Yeah.
A black hole has just sucked up another planet. We'll talk about those observations.
You're going to start our weekends by telling us what it's like to be eaten by a black hole.
It is, yes. And there's been another security breach. We'll outline the methodology used. It's always useful to see that kind of thing. The internet was cut in Georgia. This is Georgia over the one of the former Russian states,
right,
by a 75-year-old woman digging for scrap metal.
Great.
So that, you know, I think they need to. We'll talk how that happened.
Misutility.
And Facebook has done something quite good. They have a data center design, and they've made it like open source software, and that's going to lead to the website of the week.
Okay.
And of course, I know that you're really excited about this. Superconductivity has celebrating its 100th birthday.
Well, I was
since
around
its discovery.
When that
happened.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
And the man that we're profiling in profiles in IT dated Martha Stewart for 15 years.
I think I'm a little more interested in that than. That sounds like a great story.
That's right. But now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes, we've got a letter from Ron Krieger. Dear Tech Talk, first, regarding your interesting discussion about flash cookies last Saturday, I'd appreciate your informed opinion about the inexpensive flash cookie cop, which is a utility offered by PC Magazine. And he got a second question. Why is it that downloaded and streamed videos like TV episodes and movies usually strip out the closed captions or English subtitles or that are typically included in a DVD or a Blu-ray disc of the same show? Is it a technical issue or are they just trying to save money or save bandwidth? Either way, it makes these downloads largely useless for hard of hearing friends and relatives who rely on closed caption. Thanks for your help and for your always informative and enjoyable broadcast.
Wow.
Ron Krieger. Thank you, Ron. Well, I looked at Flash Cookie Cop. I actually haven't used it. They charge $7.95 for it.
Okay. It's reasonable.
Yeah, it's reasonable. And what the Flash Cookie, last year I talked about, you've got cookies that are saved by your browser. And then there's another kind of cookie that's saved by your Adobe Flash Reader, and it's saved outside of the browser. So when you clear your browser cookies, those Flash cookies are still there. And I explained a method last week where you could disable those Flash cookies or you could delete them all. But this was Flash Cookie Cop. Every time a Flash cookie is deposited on your hard drive, you're warned, and you have a chance of either allowing it or disallowing it. That is convenient. But it's $7.95. What I've since discovered is CC Cleaner, which is a disk cleaner. It actually clears Flash cookies.
Wow!
Free, and it's a free download. CC Cleaner. It's a free download, and I really didn't notice that because they always said you want to clear the cookies, and I went in and looked, and it turns out they also clear Flash cookies. So when I went and looked at all the different discussions about Flash Cookie Cop, a lot of people said, look, why should I pay $7.95 when I can get my cookies clean, Flash cookies clean, for free?
Okay. Well, so Doc, why would I want to pay $7.95 when I can get my cookies clean for free?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, too. But,
okay. But you don't know the answer to that.
No, you don't. Okay. I'm really more going for the free software.
Maybe anyway. We should take this into the laboratory and find out
yes.
if there's one way better than the
now,
other.
Now, as to the second part of the question, I did look at the stripping out of the closed captions. It turns out that it's there's kind of a format mismatch between sort of the streaming format and what they store on the DVDs. And I was noticing that Netflix last year, last August, announced that they were going to start offering closed caption on selected products, and they were going to try to roll that out over more and more products over mm-hmm. time. And so I think we'll see more of that. Also, Hulu, which delivers streamed media, they've also made a commitment to add more closed caption. And they actually, apparently there's a format mismatch, so they just can't stream it and also stream the closed caption. So they are having to do that conversion. They're aware of the problem, and they're rolling out specific programs with closed caption on them as they can. So I guess it would be more of a budget issue. If you're using Netflix or Hulu, and there's a particular program you'd like to have closed captions, if you email them, they might put that on the top of the priority.
That's very cool.
That's what I'd recommend on mm-hmm. that one. Okay, we got an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've recently moved from Outlook Express to Windows Live Mail. Now, I've got several Verizon.net email addresses. You know, if you have Verizon, they let you set up 5 or 6 different email addresses that are all being delivered to my Windows Live Mail inbox. I'm using a Windows XP operating system. Now, at some point when I set this thing up, it had me set up a Hotmail account because I guess they were just trying to prompt you to set up Hotmail. That's of course, the Microsoft webmail service. Now, I'm unclear about this Hotmail stuff. That is it being delivered to my Windows Live Media box when I sign in, or do I have to? Can I get Hotmail in another way? What is actually going on? I appreciate your program and all the insights into IT. Thanks, Lauren. Well, I think you need to, let me explain how Windows Live Mail works. Actually, it's a repository for multiple email accounts. And what you actually do, you are actually adding the email accounts to the Windows Live Media. And every time you add a new email account, it creates a new inbox for you for that particular account. And you can add multiple accounts. And you can actually, you put in your username and password. You put in your outgoing mail server, your incoming mail server, and it can get the email from either using either what they call Post Office Protocol, POP Protocol, or IMAP Protocol, which is commonly used for businesses. And it's very convenient. Then you just can log on to Windows Live Mail, and it goes out to all your different email services and brings them down. Hmm. Now, if you want, now you can still go to your separate email accounts and log in. Now, you also have a choice whether you have the emails on the other, the emails deleted from the individual email server. So Windows Live Mail is going to download the email to the Windows Live Mail inbox, and you can either leave it on the mail server or delete it. You have that choice. Now, what I do, I leave all my mail on the mail server. That way I can log in from multiple computers and I can always have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to leave it, and the default setting is to leave it on the server. If you want to delete it from the server when you download it, you basically, what you want to do is you want to go to Tools, Accounts, and then you can, you'll see all the different email accounts that are set up. You can right click on an email account for properties, click on properties, and go to Advanced tab, and you can unclick Leave Mail on the server. So you can actually log into your Hotmail account. If you don't have a Hotmail account, you just sort of signed up for it by mistake, you don't even need it.
Mm-hmm.
You can just delete the Hotmail account. And you can add or delete any of these things. So if you want to add a new email account, you just go to Tools, Accounts, and then you can select Add an Email Account. You'll provide your username and password, incoming email server address, the outgoing email server address. And then you also want to check Remember the Password box. Otherwise, you'll have to provide the password for every single email account every time you log on to Windows Mail.
Good.
And You really don't want to do that.
And if you're a good Tech Talk listener, you have a different password for each one of those
accounts.
That's
right.
You change them.
Now, usually what happens on your outgoing mail is a problem. See, your outgoing mail service is kind of a problem because you might have a Gmail account, but Gmail is going to work because that's actually would work okay. But if you're sending, say, an outgoing mail from a POP account, it's going to go through an outgoing service, which is provided by your internet service provider. So you'll probably have to add a password if you're going to use an outgoing email service for an email account which is not of the type that your internet service provider has. And typically, you cannot use an outgoing mail server from an account which is not connected with your ISP, because then you're basically just passing through that outgoing mail server, and that's how spam is generated, when you actually use somebody else's outgoing email account and pass through. And so normally that kind of email is blocked. So normally, you know, that's your biggest problem, getting the outgoing mail server set up. So good luck with your Windows Live Media. It sounds like you don't even use Hotmail, so I just delete it from the accounts and just forget about it.
Yeah,
I think they just were recommending that you get it because it's their account.
Right.
Okay, now we have got an email from Tung. Tung emails us from Ohio quite frequently.
Yeah, she's a repeat, and it's funny. This started a whole thing a couple years ago how she listens to us.
I know, up in Ohio on the internet. She says, "Dear Dr. Schertz, I have a friend in New Jersey who sends me jokes, which are fun to read. I've not received any for a couple of weeks, even though she's been sending them. Why haven't I received any?" Well, Tung, your email's probably being marked as spam. Now, jokes kind of sound like spam. And actually, if these jokes are broadcast to a lot of people, that's going to be the first mark of spam. Now, if the jokes have anything to do with sex or politics or religion, they're commonly marked as spam. So if you're getting dirty jokes, they might go into spam.
Well, I guess it all depends on what Tung's sense of humor is, right?
It really would be. So I don't know what kind of jokes you're getting. Now, actually, the filter evaluates a message as spam. And so what you can do, if you have a spam folder, you could go to that folder and you could call it not spam, so that the filter would not declare it as spam. Now, one of the problems is, say if you've got a Gmail account and there are a lot of people who are getting that same joke list in Gmail, and maybe if 10% of those people mark it as spam, then Gmail might say, okay, this must be spam, and then it's spam for everybody.
Spam is really, Google is really good at picking out spam.
Gmail is the best for spam filter. So that's what I'd recommend. You also might have her send it to another email account where you've got more control over the spam filters, but that is what I think the problem would be.
Yep.
Let's take a break.
But first, we love your emails. Tell folks how they can send you an email question.
Actually, I want to talk about the Richmond Open House, too, before we take the break.
Okay, great.
You can send us an email, techtalk@stratford.edu. We love the emails, and those are forwarded directly to me, and we'll bring them up on the air at the next show or maybe two weeks afterwards. That would be techtalk@stratford.edu. Now, this last week was a very exciting week for us. We actually had the grand opening of our campus in Richmond. So that campus, we had a soft opening October 12th of 2010.
What is a soft opening?
It means that we don't have the grand opening yet.
You were actually doing classes and
stuff. It means that students started going to school.
Okay.
We've got about 140 students.
Fabulous.
We thought that we should actually have some students enrolled in school before we had the grand opening.
It looks a lot better, doesn't it?
otherwise you got this big empty building and it doesn't look good. Well, the keynote speaker was the Virginia Secretary of Education, Dr. Gerard Robinson. He came there. He's a friend of Stratford. He had some very complimentary remarks about Stratford, about how the private education sector in Virginia is going to help the governor meet his education goals. The other thing is, we got an award for the architecture, the Greater Richmond Association for Commercial Real Estate awarded this particular development, and it was given to Stratford University and Tallheimer Real Estate, who are the developers behind it.
They're big down there, aren't they?
Yeah, the Grace Award for the best renovation and reuse project in Richmond for 2010. That was quite a big deal. We actually, it's a beautiful facility there. It's 53,000 square feet. It's located in Short Pump at the intersection of Route 64 and Broad Street. It includes a full restaurant facility, three very large culinary kitchens, plus the kitchen for the restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's got health sciences labs, nursing labs, computer labs. It's got a big circular library, all glass around. It's sort of a big circular dome. It's very pleasant to study in there. It has a tiered lecture hall there that seats 80. Features several study areas throughout the building and a nice snack area connected to an outside picnic area. So it's a great environment for students. The facility will support ultimately about 2,200 students and employ around 150 in staff and faculty. So we're creating jobs.
Yeah.
We're trying to help help the president with job creation.
There you go. Yeah. Short pumps that happen in places a lot.
Short pump is the Tyson's Corner of Richmond.
Exactly. That's
it
right.
It is the Tyson's Corner of Richmond. And enrollment's now currently about 140 students, and it's growing rapidly. We love that area in Richmond. It's a great area, and they've really welcomed us. The Board of Supervisors were there. All the folks from the government were there. The Planning Commission was there. They gave us a lot of support to get this project done, get it done quickly and through the system.
Now, of course, you have Cafe Kareem in Richmond, right?
Yes.
Is that open to the public How does that work?
It's open to the public. They actually have fine dining on Thursdays at Cafe Kareem in Woodbridge. In fact, I just had...
Oh, that's in Woodbridge. What's the cafeteria?
They haven't named it yet. We let the culinary department name it.
And wow.
So Cafe Kareem in Woodbridge, I just ate there actually on Thursday. We had these Kobe beef steaks, like they...
yeah.
I asked that. Now, this was raised in America. I said, this isn't Kobe beef from Japan, is it? Or did you get a
because you'll get the bill for that.
No, it could be radioactive.
Oh, that's right. Well, I hadn't thought of that.
I said, you didn't get some sale on Japanese Kobe beef, did you?
And we'll turn the lights off and find out. If it glows in the dark,
And he said he got it from America. It was a fantastic meal there. That's actually the first time I've had fine dining in Woodbridge, and they're doing a great job down there. I'm very proud of that operation there. So,
excellent.
Anyway, we're happy with Woodbridge and with the grand opening.
Very good. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stay with us. Be right back.
We love you so.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Today we're going to be talking about Charles Simonyi. Charles Simonyi is a computer software executive who was head of Microsoft's application software group in the very beginning, and he oversaw the creation of Microsoft Office. I think he was like employee number 75, something like that, way, way back in the beginning. So he made a bundle on Microsoft. Charles Simonyi was born September 10th, 1948, in Budapest, Hungary. While in high school, he worked part-time as a night watchman at a computer laboratory overseeing a large Soviet Ural 2 mainframe. Now, he kind of took an interest in computing, and he got to know one of the engineers who was sitting there working the mainframe, and he learned to program in his night watchman job. By the time he left high school, he had actually written a compiler. That's quite impressive. He learned how to write a compiler for the mainframe, and he sold the compiler to one of the government departments there in Hungary. And he was hired by a company AS Regne Centralen in 1966. He worked there for a couple of years on computer programming, and then he decided he'd better get his career on track. I think his parents wanted him to get his college degree and not get sidetracked on writing compilers. So he moved to the U.S. in 1968 to attend UC Berkeley, and he earned a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering in 1972. Simon enrolled in the Stanford University graduate program, and right after he started the graduate program, he was hired by Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, PARC.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in their heyday when Bob Metcalf was there, the inventor of Internet, and they were developing the first PC. And this was like a very innovative group there back then. Now, Xerox didn't do much with all that technology, and it was spun out everywhere else, but it was a hot place to work then. He and Butler Lampson developed Bravo, the first WYSIWYG document preparation program. WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. You see what you see on the screen is what you get. WYSIWYG. And so this was Bravo, and this was actually a precursor to all of the kind of Windows programs that we have now. So they developed a program called Bravo, first WYSIWYG document preparation program. And it was became operational in 1974, only a couple of years after he started there at PARC. He received his PhD in computer science in 1977. It took him 5 years to get up through get his dissertation done. And his dissertation was a software management project called metaprogramming. Now, this metaprogramming was really a new way of managing software development, and it was meant to defeat Brooks' Law because it required all programmers to communicate through a manager rather than directly. And see, Brooks' Law is this: any software project adding more programmers to an already late software project will make it even later.
Mm-hmm.
That's Brooks' Law. So he wanted to find a way to add more programmers and make it not as late.
Yeah.
By better managing. This is called meta programming. In other words, outside of the programming, how can you manage the programming? Okay, he worked actually at PARC until 1981, and then Bob Metcalf actually is the guy that invented Ethernet and ultimately started 3Com, said, Charles, he called him Charles. He didn't call him Dr. Simonian. You know, Charles, I think you just ought to apply directly to Bill Gates to Microsoft. This was when, Bill Gates had about 70 people, and Bill Gates was working on writing Fortran programs and writing compilers for the various computers. And he applied to Bill Gates to work at Microsoft. And he was put in charge of a little applications group. And he was able to bring one guy over from PARC to work for him. So there are two guys in the applications group, and they started working on Word and Excel. And they were trying to kind of make their first cut at it. He introduced techniques at Microsoft called object-oriented programming. That, of course, had been developed at Xerox. Now everything's done with object-oriented programming, where you create objects that are self-contained. And then once you create objects that are self-contained, it's easier to put them together to larger scale software programs. So it's a very good organization method for software development. He also developed the Hungarian notation for naming variables. And actually, the Hungarian notation for naming variables was used all throughout Microsoft. You see, you've got variables. You might have string variables. You might have different formats of variables. So he would, in the beginning, he would have a few lowercase letters at the beginning of the name, which would indicate the type of the variable. And then he would have the name of the variable starting with a capital letter at the end of it. So you could look at anything named with the Hungarian notation. You'd know the name of it, and you'd know what it was. You'd know the type. And that was very useful for programmers, so they wouldn't get confused on their variables. So that's a very powerful technique when you're programming the Hungarian notation. Now, in 2002, he left Microsoft. He had a lot of stock. He actually, by the way, just to give you a side note, I'll get to this later.
Another sidebar.
Forbes estimated his net worth at $1 billion.
I like him already.
Based on his Microsoft stock.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he made the big bucks.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, a billionaire in 2002, he said, well, Bill, I think I'm going to head on out of here. So he was, And, you know, so he actually, look at this. He started Microsoft in 81,
mm-hmm.
and he left in 2002. So he was there 21 years,
mm-hmm.
$1 billion. Not
shabby.
So he co-founded a small software company with a friend, Gregor Gonzalez. It's called Intentional Software. Now, intention... there's logic to this.
Okay, there's
logic.
I'm just waiting for it to pour out of the radio.
There's logic for this. Now this, what it is, instead of when you're trying to build a new application, instead of the programmer going and talking to the domain experts and writing everything from scratch, what the programmer builds a toolbox which is specific to a particular domain, and then he sits with the domain expert and shows them how to use the toolbox. And it's a WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Look. And then the domain expert can sort of put graphical objects together to define the logic of what he wants to accomplish. And then the system writes the software in the end. So it's a way that you let the domain expert actually write the logic of the software through this toolbox. It's kind of the application of artificial intelligence to software development. Now, this company has not been wildly successful yet. It's mm-hmm. a fairly small company. People can't quite figure out what to do with it. And I don't think he's really spending that much time on it because you see, he's actually been, now in 2000, I'll tell you why, he's been really distracted. He sails around the world six months out of the year. I'll get to the rest of his life.
Yeah.
You know, once he got that $1 billion, he decided to sort of change his style of living.
I think I'd have changed it a little before then.
In 2004, he received the Wharton Infosys Business Transformation Award for the industry-wide impact of his innovation work on information technology. Now, he dated Martha Stewart for 15 years until...
How do you date somebody for 15 years?
And listen, he dated Martha Stewart for 15 years, right? And even this was through her prison term, because she got out of prison...
Oh, maybe that's what ended it.
She got out of prison in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So then he dumped her in February 2008. Then in November of 2008, Simonyi married a Swedish millionaire's daughter.
Oh, maybe that has
Lisa
something to do with it.
Lisa Perd's daughter. She was 32 years his junior. So when he was 60, he married this millionaire's daughter who was 28.
It's all starting to make sense.
Now listen, he's got a 233-foot super yacht.
Uh-huh.
He spends called Scat.
Uh-huh.
He spent 6 months out of the year going around the world in Scat. And so that's why I think his new business has been going a little bit slow.
Gotcha.
Now,
yeah, he's not there.
Now, the thing is, he also yearned for space. So in April 2007, he launched up to the International Space Station for about 23 days. And he's an amateur radio operator.
Uh-huh.
His call letters are KE7KDP. And while he was going around in the International Space Station, he was talking to amateur radio operators around the world. On April 7, 2007, the American Radio Relay League reported that Simonyi was making ham radio contacts from space in
wow.
the U.S. Then he loved that space trip so much that he returned to space in March of 2009 until April 8th of 2000. I think he probably paid millions for these trips.
I was going to say, when you're worth $1 billion, you know, what's a couple mil?
So he's going up into space. He's got his new wife, and he's on a sailboat 6 months out of the year. So I think his new company, Intentional Software, is moving a little bit slowly.
Gotcha.
So there you know everything you want to know about Charles Simonyi, the guy who actually developed Microsoft Office.
But you always pick these people that have impossible last names to pronounce.
Yeah, how do you pronounce
okay,
that?
Okay, so we decided to run it through Google Translate. I haven't heard this. You haven't heard this. Here's what it is. It won't play.
Let's go. Translate.
Google Translate will not play. Let's try it again.
Simonyi.
Simonyi.
Simonyi?
Simonyi.
Charles Simonyi.
Yep. How about
okay.
that? Okay, wait a
the
second.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Yep. David is here.
I started inventorying my wallet when I heard that he was dating Martha Stewart.
I was going to say, speaking of amateur radio operators, David Byrd is with us.
Yeah. He is so bad. He is so bad.
You know,
what's wrong with Martha Stewart? I imagine she'd be fun on a date.
She would be. I think. I'm not going to say anything, Dave.
Listen, do I really need to put a sachet in my underwear drawer? Really? Okay. Well, why not? Doc, I think I gave you a homework assignment. Did you ever come through?
Oh, yeah. We did. Well, we did.
You didn't come back.
Trips to India and wherever else you went.
Yeah, we did. We did.
Well, I even forgot what I tasked you with. Remember, Jim?
Yeah. It must have been that important then.
It was. But it's been so long. It was. I forgot.
If you've been listening, you'd know that Doc answered your question. Actually, one of our
I gotta be here when you answer it, sir. I'm the one that asked the question. What was the deal?
Well, let me see.
You were researching. Hello.
Oh yeah.
I'll remember when you tell me.
We
I can find that.
I don't remember exactly.
Do we have the time to search this in my Gmail account?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's segue.
Okay.
The segue is very simple.
So what else is going on?
A great article yesterday on being able to crack your iPhone to get new things on there that Apple doesn't want you to do to it.
Yeah.
You probably read the same article, did you?
No, I didn't read that article. But they've been cracking iPhones for years.
Well, I'm late to the party, man. What can I tell you?
Yeah, we've got folks at school that actually take and hack their iPhone and load all these applications. Now, here's the problem. When you upgrade the OS, Apple doesn't like it, and they might brick you. So what they do,
they might brick me. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that
you
mean?
You like these new slang terms, don't you? You don't think I know what they mean, and I don't.
They might make it inoperable.
Oh.
So what they do is they unhack it and lock it again, then they upgrade the operating system, and then they rehack it.
Okay.
So I've got a whole group of students there at Stratford that are quite experts on this. They're locking and unlocking their phones all the time.
I think I need to take a trip over to Stratford.
Which campus
will it be? The Tyson's Corner?
That'd be the Tyson's Corner campus. I've got a whole team of, because here's the other thing. When they're finished with their iPhone.
You call them crackers?
They can sell it in India for a lot of money.
Right.
But only if it's unlocked. So they unlock it, and then they sell it on the open market for a killing, and then they go back to Verizon after their 2 years and get another subsidized one.
Okay, Doc, I remember what it was. You're supposed to research the tuners for me.
Yes, I know, we did.
What's the story? Help me.
We did. Well,
it was basically any...
I've been in a time warp for 20 years.
It was the
home theater.
Home theater, exactly.
The home theater is what I got to do?
What it is,
home theater tuner.
It's basically a home theater tuner, they're about $200.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the deal.
That's the deal. And you're probably going to want to get a 5.1 Dolby system, which would be, five speakers plus the
plays FM and AM and also plays your movies.
Yeah, it's got all of that. And the other thing is if you want to have streaming, Netflix.
Yes, I do.
You want to have Netflix.
I don't want to go to YouTube.
Yeah. So what you've got to do is make certain you've got an internet connection. And
To your tuner, or it could be
to your DVD player,
right?
Or it could be in your Xbox, because they've got internet connections on all of them.
Yeah, I've seen the internet connections on the Bluetooth, the Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray. Machines. That would be good enough.
Translate that for me for us mortals. I get a Blu-ray machine, and I want to watch YouTube stuff. I can go through the DVD player to get
that. So what you do is that you plug in the internet, and the Blu-ray converts the internet to a video stream for you. Ooh. And then you can then direct that video stream, just turn it to your Blu-ray tuner.
Right.
And so your tuner thinks it's playing a DVD, but really it's bringing in streaming video.
Nice.
So look at it this way,
Here we go.
How I used to have an old tuner for radio stuff.
This has
got like video in it, right?
Now, If you've got unlimited, now the thing is, if you've got unlimited money, I would go for the Bose flat panel TV with the built-in audio, directional audio. It's only $6,000.
Excuse me, Mr. CEO, President of the World.
I wish you guys were watching on Home and Garden TV to our simulcast. You could have seen David's facial reaction to that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, I think I'll just jot over to India for lunch.
Now, a good receiver is only going to be a couple hundred bucks.
No, that's it.
It's only going to be a couple hundred bucks. Yeah,
I do the Bose. What's the Bose cost these days?
Six grand.
Six grand.
They have this. What is it's called? Video Wave.
Right. It's a 60-inch screen or something like that.
No, but it's got a directional sound system using phased arrays.
Phased arrays.
Oh, gosh.
And so, what happened is that you can take this phased array and you can point it in this direction. It sounds like the sound is coming from one wall or another wall. So even though you don't have any speakers in the room, it's all in the TV itself.
Sweet.
It sounds like you've got surround sound. And so it's actually a very clever engine. I went into the Bose store, and they've got this theater, and I listened to that system. It's quite impressive.
Very impressive.
I think that's what you need,
six,
David.
But it's but you don't need a tuner. You don't need anything. No. But it's $6,000.
That's what you need to impress the ladies, David.
Now, the thing is, why wouldn't you want to get a 3D TV? Like, are we going to get a new TV too?
No, I've already got my TV.
You got,
okay, got the 52. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did you HD. Did you get 3D?
Show off.
No, I didn't.
You didn't get 3D.
Well, no, I don't need 3D because this is so crystal clear. It looks like 3D. It really does.
Okay.
You got HD. You got the 52-inch. It's a brand new Sony.
You probably have an internet connection in your Sony.
You know,
I think I do.
If you watch TV.
So the thing is, you only need one internet connection.
Yeah.
So you don't need this. Then you don't have to have an internet connection on your receiver. Then if you've got it in your TV. So yes. you've got a very good TV.
It's like
Sony.
The older brother I never had.
Yeah. So the Sony's not the Sony's a good one. So there, I gave two or three suggestions last week, which if you go to the Tech Talk outline,
you're going to make me work for it, aren't you?
Of course, why not? Hold
it. In fact, what we're going to do? Let me explain it.
It was the week before last.
Go to Tech Talk Online. I'm going to show people how you go to TechTalkOnline.com. So we go to TechTalkOnline.com.
All right, I'm just looking at
and then I go down to, last month, March. And I think
I think it was the week before last, because I just checked last
You think
week
it was
show.
The 19th?
Yeah,
no,
I think it was.
No. But let's try March 26th. Yeah. Let me see here.
I'm telling you. He does do great footnotes.
It's the 19th.
No, it's not.
It's the 26th.
The 26th is this is the droid. It's clearly Bloomberg. See, it is. It's not. It's not the 26th either.
I'm telling you. Check the 19th.
No, the 19th is a best of.
How about the week before that?
Let's go to April 2nd.
Wow. That's what it was.
No fooling.
It's April 2nd.
It's April 2nd.
In regard to David Berg's question. Wow. So the recommendations were...
You got ink.
You got ink. Yeah. There you go. You got this. They got the Sony, the Yamaha, the Denon, or the Onkyo are all good ones. You can get them at Amazon, Best Buy, or G.H. Gregg.
Doc,
for around a couple hundred dollars.
I want to sincerely thank you.
That's the video wave system, Dave, if you've got unlimited money.
Dr. Schertz cares.
He does care.
Yeah,
he really does. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Well, Doc, I think I've pretty well satisfied my curiosity, and
I
thank you so much.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Okay.
We'll give you the keys back to your show.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Now, I hope you have not been sleeping during the first half of class.
How could that be possible?
Because if you're sleeping, you're going to have missed the answer. So those of you in the front row that were taking notes, I think you can do all right.
We can earlier, tell by the
earlier, yes, earlier in the show, we were talking about Charles Simonier. Simonier, who was, of course, one of the first employees at Microsoft, and he was actually head of the applications department that ultimately developed Microsoft Office. Before Microsoft, he worked for Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, and he developed there the first WYSIWYG document preparation system. What was the name of that document preparation system that he developed at Xerox Park?
Well, if you know the correct answer and you're the first caller with it, or the caller I select, you will win a fabulous prize, and we'll tell you about that after we get a winner. The number to call is 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333.
Astronomers watched a star get torn apart by a black hole. Now, on March 28, 2011, NASA's SWIFT satellite caught a flash of high-energy X-rays pouring in from deep space. Now, SWIFT is designed to do this, and since its launch in 2004, it's seen hundreds of such things. They're usually caused by stars exploding at the end of their lives. It's really it's a sorry mission to see the death of stars. This time it saw a star getting torn apart as it fell too close to a black hole. Now the event was labeled GRB 11328. That stands for gamma ray burst, March 28th, 2011. Now normal gamma ray bursts are when a supermassive star collapses or an ultra dense neutron stars merge to form a black hole. Although initially cataloged as a GRB, follow-up observations indicated that this was no usual event. The way the light grew and faded seemed to fit better a star getting torn apart. Now, the observations indicate that the black hole in question may have been about half a million times the mass of the sun, meaning that it's very probably a supermassive black hole near the very center of a distant galaxy. Hubble Space Telescope's observation also placed it near the center of a galaxy. The center, what happened was this star got closer and closer and closer to the black hole. So the portion of the star which was closest felt more gravity, and the black hole started stretching the star. This process is called tides. Now, stars held together by its own gravity. Finally, it got close enough, and there was such a huge gravitational gradient that the star got ripped apart as it was pulled into the black hole. And at the point that it got ripped apart, you had this enormous burst of energy. The material that swirled around the black hole formed a small and temporary accretion disk. Observations indicate that for a short time, two beams of matter and energy called jets erupted from the black hole, and it was this flash of tremendous energy that triggered SWIFT and the flurry of observations. So there you go. Yet more activity in deep outer space.
Okay, we've got somebody on the line who has the answer to the question. Let's go to line number 4. This is Mark calling from Rockville, Maryland. Mark, good morning.
Morning.
How are you? Doc asked a question.
Yes, earlier in the show I talked about Charles Simonier, who, of course, developed the applications for Microsoft. But before Microsoft, he was working at Xerox Park. What was the name of the WYSIWYG document preparation system that he developed there?
It was Bravo.
That is correct. Very good. You'll win two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room or to the Karim Dining Room in Woodbridge. And if you hold for a while, you'll probably get to the dining room in Richmond, Virginia.
That's right.
Stay on the line. Talk to Andrew and give your name and address. We'll get back to you a little bit later.
Mark, thank you. Thank you for listening. Do you listen to us often?
Yes, pretty much every Saturday morning.
Oh, that's great. Thanks a lot. We appreciate that. And thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Hang on the phone. Andrew will be right with you. You are listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. And this is Tech Talk, and we will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And this week, Facebook did something good. Oh. You know, I've been fairly critical of Facebook for their privacy policy and some of their other policies. But they continue to grow and do well despite that criticism. But this week they did something that was very good. They're opening up a new data center in rural Oregon. Now, usually when companies open up data centers, the designs are super secret.
Ooh.
Microsoft has a data center, super, super secret design. Google has a data center, super, super secret design.
You're funny.
Now, the whole thing, though, is that these guys have these super secret designs, but they base them on open source software, like Linux operating systems or Apache web server. And it sort of is inconsistent that they embrace open source software, but then they've got closed source hardware. And Mark Zuckerberg wanted to fix this. He said, you know, he said, when I started my program Facebook, I could only do it in my dorm room because PHP and Apache and other free and open source software existed, so I didn't have to buy anything. I could just do it. And so he decided to create a new model for data centers and sort of have like open source data center development. And so what he did is that they have released all of the designs for their data center in Prineville, Oregon. That'll be switched on later this month. Now, this data center is 147,000 square feet. It will increase Facebook's overall computing capacity by about half. Now, the social network already processes some 100 million new photos. 100 million new photos every day.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And it has a user base of over 500 million and is growing fast.
Mm.
So this leads me right into the website of the week, which is Open Compute. You go to www.opencompute.org. It's got all the specs for the data center. I spent quite a bit of time on this. Very impressive. Now, Facebook's energy consumption per unit computing power has declined by 38%. Now, the new data center has a PEU. Now, that's called, for those of you, power usage effectiveness, PEUs, of 1.073, and it's well below the EPA-defined state-of-the-art of 1.51. This means that 93% of the energy from the grid makes it into the open compute server. It's only 7% is lost with cooling and other things and other ancillary systems. They've removed centralized chillers and have eliminated traditional inline UPS systems and removed a 480-volt to 208-volt transformer. They have Ethernet-powered LED lighting and passive cooling infrastructure to reduce energy requirement. Now, this website includes complete server specs. What they did, they actually designed a new motherboard. They designed new servers from scratch, and they asked something very simple. They said, if it doesn't contribute to what we need, we're not going to have it. So they just removed a lot of stuff from the server. So they say these are like vanity-free servers. They can't really brag about they've got the greatest graphics and that. They were vanity-free. They only have what they need. And they actually built brand-new power supplies that would be extremely efficient. And they gave the full specs on the servers and how they built them. They gave the full specs on all their passive cooling. And I went and looked at the thing. They've got 150, you know, page specifications with pictures and everything, exactly how they did it. And what they hope is that others will look at what they've done and suggest ways to improve it. And they would like to start a movement of open source data centers so that the whole internet worldwide could become more efficient.
Excellent.
So they want to bring to open source hardware what has already occurred in open source software. I think this is pretty darn innovative.
Yeah.
And I've got to give kudos to Mark Zuckerberg. This is a great, great idea. So the website of the week, and I urge you to go there, go to opencompute.org and look at their design.
Excellent. Let's take a little break here. This is Tech Talk. You're listening to us on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2, 103.5 FM, HD2. To learn more about this show, go to techtalkonline.com. To learn more about our fabulous sponsors, Stratford University, go to stratford.edu. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. 100 years ago, on April 8th, 1911, at the Leiden Cryogenic Laboratory in the Netherlands, Heike Onnes and his collaborators immersed a mercury capillary into liquid helium and saw mercury's resistance drop to nothing. Once the temperature reached about 3 degrees Kelvin, liquid helium, that would be 3 degrees above absolute zero or minus 270 degrees Celsius.
Yikes. That's cold.
You can't go any lower than
zero
degrees because basically everything stops shaking, and that's pretty much as cold as you can go.
I don't think I'd stop shaking.
No.
Well, I would, but
now
pretty quickly, actually.
This phenomenon is called superconductivity and is one of the first quantum phenomena to be discovered, although at that point in time, they didn't even know about quantum theory. Now, in the subsequent decades, theoreticians have been able to put quantum mechanics on a solid foundation, and they've explained superconductivity. And since then, researchers have discovered new families of materials that are superconductive at higher and higher temperatures. The current record holder is is superconductive at 138 degrees Kelvin. So that's about as hot as they can get. Now, the promise of superconductors is pretty good. If you have a power grid that's superconducting, you could transmit power and not waste any energy because there's no resistance. Now, the disadvantage is you got to keep the wire cold.
Right.
So that could take a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Superconductors have made it possible to build strong magnets that power magnetic resonance imaging devices. In fact, superconductors are used for the magnets in the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, because they have to get extremely large magnetic fields to focus that beam, and they need, if they would not have superconducting materials in those magnets, the magnets would get too hot when they'd run those high currents through them. Now, also, some of the most accurate measurements in science are done using superconductor. They use superconducting quantum interference devices called SQUIDs.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And they're very, very sensitive. Now, also, it turns out that the superconducting electrical transmission lines are actually going to be fielded quite quickly. A South Korean utility company plans to install them in large scale in South Korea over the next couple of years. So many U.S. scientists are hoping that these grids may be built in the U.S. Now, the dream was that we would use superconductive magnets for magnetically levitated trains.
Uh-huh.
And that just hasn't come to pass yet because it's just too hard to keep the whole track cold. But
yeah.
There you go. Superconductivity discovered 100 years ago.
Cool.
Now, RSA was the latest of companies to be compromised with a cyber attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they and attacked their secure ID system, and EMC's division, RSA, explained how it was compromised, and it was done with a phishing attack. You know, this is where you have a spoof email, and it used a zero-day exploit in Adobe Flash. Now, they don't really offer, RSA really didn't say what information was stolen. They've sort of been, haven't been very open with that, but they did explain how the penetration occurred. There were two small batches of emails sent to key RSA personnel, and they said the 2011 recruitment plan was the subject line, and they spoofed the return email address, so it looked like it had been sent by an internal EMC employee, but it actually was just a fake return address, which you can do with email quite easily, and it had attached to it a spreadsheet, and some of the recipients opened the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
And when the spreadsheet was open, there was an embedded flash file that executed malicious code using one of the zero-day vulnerabilities, and it enabled the attacker to gain full access to the PC and install other software to remotely control it. And they loaded on a program called the Poison Ivy Rat. Now, the Poison Ivy Rat... it would request commands from other central servers to see what it would want to do, and it wasn't really detected very easily. The Poison Ivy was also used in some of the penetration attacks in Operation Aurora against Google in late 2009. Now, after they got these particular machines compromised, they targeted the credentials for people with access to high-value information. They aggregated that information and then exported it via file transfer protocol to an external website, and then they erased all evidence that they had been on the site. And so there you go, another exploit which was done with a phishing email.
Yep.
So there you go. By the way, since then, Adobe Flash, that the particular exploit has been patched. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Make certain to send us emails at techtalk@stratford.edu. You can also go to techtalkonline.com, and you can listen to all the shows. You can sign up for the podcast, or you can sign up for the podcast on Apple iTunes. But most importantly, go to stratford.edu and check out all those great programs at Falls Church and Woodbridge and Richmond in New Delhi, India.
That's right.
And online. And let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
And our replay is tomorrow at 4 p.m.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
And we've got Capitals hockey, their last home game of the season today. Coverage starts at 6 p.m. Fog, mist, 44 degrees in Northwest at 10 a.m.
This is a Federal News Radio special report. I'm Amy Morris. A shutdown has been averted.
On this vote, the yeas are 348, the nays are 70, and the motion is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Congress and the White House have agreed to a continuing resolution that includes $2 billion in spending cuts. That will keep the government open until Thursday. They've also agreed on a framework including another $38 billion in cuts, which covers the rest of FY 2011. They do expect to pass that legislation before Thursday. Shortly after midnight, White House Budget Director Jacob Lew issued a memo instructing the government's departments and agencies to continue normal.